Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
For some of you, one of my next guests is primarily Bobby Ewing from Dallas. For me, more so than that, he's the man from Atlantis. And he's joined today by his partner in life, also a well-known TV actor, whom lots of you will know as Pam's mother from The American Office. Patrick Duffy and Linda Pearl, you're both very welcome.
Oh, thrilled to be with you.
Thank you, Brendan.
And guys, your latest TV project is a collaboration. You've made a documentary, Duffy's Pub, about Ireland and its pubs. And Patrick, you're no stranger to pubs. You grew up in a bar in Montana, right?
Absolutely. My very first memories were being in the bar, because we lived in the bar. Our little apartment was attached to it. And that was my playground. You know, playing shuffleboard, doing my little homework projects with the members of the community coming in the bar. So it was an extended family, which is a very interesting segue into understanding what the pub culture is in Ireland as well, which is why, you know, we started this project, is to trace those roots, my family roots, but also, you know, do it under the umbrella concept of that social aspect of what a pub or a bar, which is what we call them in the States. And the marriage of those two concepts came together for this project.
Yeah, because community is a strong theme of the show. I guess, is a good bar is a community, is it, Patrick?
Well, a good bar is less about the actual drinking than it is about the communication and the chance for people to get together. You know, long before cell phones, long before telephones. You know, the word of mouth was the way that any information got delivered, and it became the social contact for any interaction in a community. And we learned so much when we did the tour in Ireland, because many of those pubs had multi-purposes. Some were also the post office. Some were also, you know, had small grocery items. So they really did perform a multitude of functions, all of which, you know, come back into the vortex of community and what it means to communicate with your fellow people.
Do you think, after your travels now, is there a difference, do you think, between a pub and a bar?
Yes, I do think so. Generally in the US, a bar is not a place to spend a lot of time. It's not a place where you go to meet a stranger and just strike up a conversation. It's goal-oriented, if you want to, location-driven.
Right.
You stop off to have a drink and then you leave. Pubs, which we discovered, you know, I had an idea, but nothing like was really understood when we did the show, which is people go to a pub just to have that contact with other people. And, you know, a pint of something can last a long, long time because there's so much conversation that happens. There's so much interaction that happens that the drinking is a byproduct. The contact with your community, with your friends, with strangers. The phrase is there's no strangers in a pub. And I firmly believe that. You feel like the minute you walk in, somebody's telling you their story.
Yeah.
Somebody's telling you their history. You know, and they're asking yours, not in an invasive way. It's really quite remarkable. And that's, I think, is the big difference between, you know, a bar or a saloon and a pub, you know, from publican. You know, it's all about the pub.
Yeah. No, you didn't come across, did you, that, you know, Irish bars used to be very rigidly divided between the bar and the lounge, right? And the bar was generally where the men were. And the serious drinking happened, and the furniture would be of a slightly lesser quality, maybe not the same level of comfort. And the lounge then, which would have been traditionally perhaps where the ladies went, was slightly more comfortable.
Or a snug.
The snug.
Yeah. And a snug. Then was another aspect of it for privacy. Linda, I think one thing that makes this documentary so lovely is that you're a really great couple. You seem to have great fun together, do you?
We do a lot of fun and mischief and adventure, I would have to say. And this being able to be directed by Brian Redden in this and to have this adventure in Ireland was absolutely thrilling. Patrick and I have variously spent time, never together, but in Ireland previously. I had worked in Ireland. I was directed by a great Irish director, Michael O'Herlihy, and then got to do Mannions of America, which was what brought Pierce Brosnan eventually to the States, anyway, over the decades. And then my son had played in Drogheda United. So now to be back in Ireland together with Patrick and exploring it on this whole different level was very meaningful. And I'll just ramble on here for a moment.
Hang on, wind back the truck a minute. Your son played for Drogheda United.
He did. He did. Maybe 3 years ago, center mid, had a great year.
Really? What's his name?
Lucius Carey.
Okay. And how is he doing now? Where is he now?
Oh, thank you. He's no longer a footy. He's gone to the business side of showbiz for his sins, and he's, you know, thriving in Los Angeles. But I tell you what, a winter in Drogheda made a man out of him. I'm ever grateful to Ireland for
He'll be the biggest shark in Hollywood after dealing with that.
Everything he learned on the pitch, he's using in business in LA. You bet.
Linda, you and Patrick had known each other for a long time, I know, but you fell in love in the pandemic. Is that right? How did that happen?
We did. Well, our paths had crossed, as it does in the funny village of television in LA. You know, just every 15 or 20 years, we would pass each other in the hall, say, hi, how you doing? And then we met prior to the pandemic and exchanged numbers because Patrick needed to be back in touch with a mutual friend. And that led to texts and then sort of an accidental FaceTime. And then COVID hit. And we were each living in isolation, Patrick in Oregon, myself in Colorado. And we started to Zoom nightly for 2 to 3 hours. I mean, come on, he is Irish after all. And so the man could talk.
Yeah.
So we had these Zooms, and we, in this very Victorian way, I would say, we came to really know each other. And the conversation would become deeper. Patrick would write a poem and read it to me. And we just started to find deeper layers of connection until finally one day he heroically jumped in his car and drove across the Wild West and swept me off my feet. And that was that.
Wow. So you had, as you say, a very Victorian courtship over the Zoom. You got to know each other properly and everything.
Well,
it's an interesting thing that happens, because you're never troubled with the worrisome thing of, oh, we're going to say goodnight after dinner. Do I kiss her, or do I walk her to the door? Do I do that? Do I do that? All we could do was talk and listen to music. Sometimes we didn't talk. We would put on some music and listen to it together. And you got to know somebody's inner workings without all the trappings that society puts on it and all of that kind of stuff.
Yes.
And, you know. It was truly falling in love with the person and not the concept of the person. And
we had a virtual pub chat.
Yes.
We had the crack over Zoom.
And Patrick, you were a widower. Had you given up on the idea of meeting anyone at that stage?
Yeah, given up is probably not even the term. I just didn't, it didn't enter my mind. I had, you know, I'd been married for 46 years, and I was complacent. And I was content. But what I realized is I didn't have the underlying foundation of real happiness, because I thought I had spent that money, that monetary thing of happiness. And I was quite okay with that.
Okay, until that part of your life was over, you thought.
The middle of the Zooms with Linda.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was just on a different track. I was a father and a grandfather, and I thought I would be the heroic country granddad. And I thought, well, that's my job now until
still I get it.
Well, I know. But then, you know, Linda changed everything, and she reignited in me everything that I could have possibly thought I had lost, and then some. And I realized I wasn't really happy, and I wasn't really content, and I am now.
Oh my God! That is
as long as we stay in different states and Zoom.
Listen, that's beautiful, though. What the things life throws at you when you think, okay, that's it for me now, and this is my life now, and then the universe comes in and gives you Linda.
It gives me Linda.
That shut everyone up. Linda, you were going to say something.
Oh, bless your heart. Thanks. Yeah, I think maybe it's a time of life thing, but one of the things that we would talk about over the Zooms were our roots and our family histories. And so, of course, Ireland organically flowed into that conversation. And I think that was really the germination of wanting to get back to Ireland and discover Patrick's roots in particular. And we early on in the process of this, well, I had worked with Judy and Connor Lovett. All roads lead to Cork, and they were incredible. Yeah.
They're the Garrison Beckett Lazar who do the Beckett Lazar stuff. Yeah. Yeah. I actually, this is what a small world it is. I knew Connor Lovett, Linda, years ago in college, kind of. And I just met him recently for the first time in about 30 years or more. And we had a chat on a big chat on the street. Yeah. And then now his name comes up again.
Well, they're extraordinary. And they introduced us to Thomas McCarthy. And they also introduced us to Mancon McGahn. And I suspect anybody who had the privilege of meeting that remarkable man, you know, that was life changing. So
tell me how it was life changing.
It dropped us into a different level of living. I don't think either one of us had ever met anyone who's lived a life at that speed, that elevation, that authenticity, that depth. So suddenly it connected us, it opened a door to connecting us to the inner workings of Ireland.
Well, he also put into words, which he is a master of, feelings that I had but had no words to describe. Mm. You know, I would say, when I got to Ireland the very first time, I felt I was home. But Mancon can talk for 10 minutes and guide you as to what's the source of that feeling. What is the primary, primal element that comes out of the soil of Ireland that affects sons and daughters of Ireland, whether they're first time or living there? And he was the master at that.
And how did he explain it or rationalize it for you, that feeling you had when you touched down here first?
Well, you know, in this country, he would be a tent preacher. He had the gift, first of all. He had the gift of gab is not the right word. He had the gift of communication. He had the gift of humanity. And he could pull humanity out of inanimate objects. He could explain to you, you know, why the rocks in the soil had a personality that would affect you generation after generation. You know, when we first knew we were going to meet him, we read his book, the 32 Words for Field, you know, and that was just part of the concept of the world operating on a different level than I had ever thought. And I've been a Buddhist for over 50 years.
Extraordinary.
He added a depth to my Buddhist practice that I was not expecting.
Where did you meet him?
Well, we met him at
initially over Zoom. We had some Zooms again, kindness of Connor and Judy Lovett, and then with Zoom, and that was it. And then when we did sort of a recce tour of Ireland about a year before we shot the documentary, actually, and met him at his home, and just sat there at his table for 3 hours with our mouths hanging open.
Yeah, where he made soup. He made soup and bread, and we just sat and listened. Basically, we just sat and listened, and he wove a net that you don't want to escape from. You just want more and more and more from that man. Okay. And that's the tragedy. You know, I wish he'd lived to be 150, because there's so much, you know, in that funnel that he draws out of the atmosphere, the ground, and people that he gives words to make you understand. It was a remarkable, that's what it was, life-changing. You know, we'll never forget, just moment by moment, the different interactions verbally that we had with him.
That's extraordinary. And so, Linda, you're obviously kind of spiritually open to this kind of thing as well. You got a lot out of Mancon?
Oh,
absolutely. You bet.
More so. Yeah. More so, I must say. She is an absolute antenna of receiving. Yeah.
This is shall I share this?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. You'll forgive me. This is an indulgence. So four days after Mancon had passed, I woke up in the middle of the night and he was on my mind. And the only thing I knew to do was to pray for him and to the best of my limited ability, just for the continuance of his soul and his journey and purpose and just gratitude for having, touched the hem. And as I was nodding back off to sleep, I heard what to my ear sounded like gibberish. And I thought, well, that sounds a little bit like Gaelic. I thought, well, I'll look it up in the morning. And then this blaring voice said, no, look it up now because you won't remember. So glasses on, lights on, went to ChatGPT and said whatever the words were, and I just said, what does this or anything that sounds like this mean in Gaelic? And 3 seconds later, the answer came back. Goodbye, my little one. May all be well with you. I am living in the knowing. I can't even say it without puddling up. That was what the translation was. Now, that's all I know. That was my experience, whether it was an actual visitation or anyway, an accident on ChatGPT. But so anyway, I felt that that was a directive.
Okay. And that was obviously a very profound moment for you, Linda. Yeah,
it was for me.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Can I ask, was there a baking connection too? Because Moncon was he had toured making bread, you guys have a sourdough bread company too, don't you?
Yes, we do. And I have a theater in Los Angeles, and Moncon came to that theater and did his show at my theater, and then came to my bar, which is attached to the theater. So he came, did his show. Which is another interesting thing. It's half in Gaelic and half in regular English. Mm-hmm. But you think you are understanding Gaelic the whole time he's talking. It's that gift of babble, that there is one language somewhere.
Yeah.
And it covers everything. And that's what he does. And by the end of his show, which you know his show obviously very well, but by the end of his show, he had made bread on stage. We had made butter because we passed the churn around. And then at the end of it, we all broke bread, as a family community in the theater, and we're able to, share it with Moncon. And then we went next door into the bar or pub and had a drink with him. And it was the perfect symbolic Irish experience for every single person in that audience.
I think one of the things too with Moncon is that as an artist himself, well, when we were in Ireland, we, especially for Patrick, he couldn't go past a half a block without someone recognizing him, and which is always fun, and to a much, much smaller degree, myself for Happy Days or the Office. But the thing is, it happens, personally for Patrick with that recognition. So we became tangibly aware of how American arts, for better and worse, have influenced, in this case, Ireland. But then in reflection through this contact with Moncon as an artist himself, we're very aware of the Irish diaspora and how that's a two-way street, how informed our entire lives we've been by Irish artists. I mean, we were raised on the literature of Shaw and Wilde and Beckett and Seamus Heaney and on the acting talents of Peter O'Toole and the like. And then, and now it's through our teens and our youth, through the wonderful Irish musicians and how influential they've been. So,
Linda, you grew up in Japan, though, did you?
I did.
And you got all that there, yeah?
We did. I would say about 5 years later than America did, probably, but okay. You bet.
You mentioned there about how Patrick was greeted. Was it an education for you, Linda, to see how Patrick was welcomed? And I presume a lot of it to do with it. Like, you can't overstate the impact that Dallas had in this country. Did you get a sense of that?
Oh, always. That's been the case for sure. Yeah. I mean, we've seen that. We've been blessed to be able to travel a fair amount. The only country we did not experience that in was in Japan, because Dallas didn't particularly play there. But every other, across Eastern Europe, certainly across America, and et cetera.
But the interesting thing about Ireland, and it happened in the pub, the final pub in Mayo in Kilmavie, which is where my family came from, and they closed the pub to everyone except direct relatives. And it was packed when I got there, all Duffy relatives, none of whom I'd ever met. And when we walked into that pub, from the back of the pub, a voice said, "Welcome home, Patrick."
Yeah.
But it didn't just happen there. Almost without exception, you are verbally welcomed home when you go to Ireland, especially if you are a son of a son of a son of Ireland, whatever the connection might be.
Yeah.
So So that was profound to me, that it wasn't just fan worship. It wasn't just, you know, the recognition of Dallas, although yes, yeah, you know, that was huge. But they welcomed me back, not just fawned over me as a TV star. And that was that was interesting. And that was part of the symbolic reason, you know, for the ending of our project with Brian, which was I was able to then take my father back to Ireland, even though he had never been to Ireland. His father was from Ireland. That was the connection, my grandfather. But I was able to take my father back to the hometown of his father and, in essence, deliver him home again, which was, you know, a very meaningful thing for me. And
yeah, you know, it was very emotional to watch you scattering the ashes there in Mayo. What was going through your mind as you did that, Patrick?
Well, I was hoping, you know, I was hoping there would be a connection like Linda had with Mankind. Is I was hoping that wherever that energy is, that is my father and my mother, wherever that resides, that they felt that sense of coming home. They felt the comfort of being included in the family womb again. And that was going through my mind, which is why it was impossible for me to talk, basically, mm-hmm. at that moment. And you know, the show was filmed. There was a lot of film that couldn't be used. Obviously, there always is. But I had to just let Linda do the talking because I couldn't, because it was to me fulfilling an obligation that was profound to deliver my father back to his father's home.
Yeah. Well, it's part of that story that your parents died in terrible circumstances, Patrick. So yes. Did that add to that determination to bring him home?
Well, no, I think it would have happened under any circumstance. You know, it was long ago because my sister actually, if there's a right terminology, was in charge or was the recipient of the ashes of my parents and held them for years. It's been 30 years plus since they were both killed. So, you know, it was really her as the elder sibling to decide what to do. And she could never make that decision. She just didn't feel right about it until, you know, this project came to fruition, until Brian got a hold of, you know, all of the previous stuff that we'd done on our little reconnoitering. And then in conversation, talking about my parents' ashes, that's when the concept of returning them came. And when I broached that subject with my sister, it was instantaneous that she said, that's why I couldn't do anything with them before now. Mm. This is where they need to be. Take them back to Ireland. So that was, you know, the circumstances of their deaths had long since been ameliorated through me. I've come to understand all of that on a very profound level. So that wasn't a part of the quest, but the quest was just literally to deliver a son of Ireland home, which I had no idea that was what it would end up being.
What do you think your dad would have thought of seeing you there now doing that and seeing you around, traveling around Ireland for a living, visiting pubs and everything?
He would have been quite pleased because he was unabashedly proud of being, you know, admittedly a crazy Irish man.
He was
the youngest of 11 children. He was basically raised by his eldest sister, and he was known as Teeny Terry, and he could do no wrong. So he was spoiled rotten, and he got away with everything for his entire life. So he was a bit of a wild card. Okay. He was a handsome publican person. So and then of course he inherited the bar from his wife's mother and father. So he was everything in the most charming way that you would say an Irishman is, and he would have loved the fact that he was returned to Ireland, but that it took us 5 pubs and 12 days to get in there.
Yeah, like any great Irish journey.
Yeah. He wanted to visit every Duffy pub that he could, and then we brought him home.
Okay.
One of the lovely things was that we traveled with Mr. and Mrs. Duffy in a baggie, and we could hardly bring that to the cemetery. So we had reached out to some new friends at Kilmovie, and there was no explanation needed. They brought forth a couple of boxes, and which one would you like to put your parents' ashes in? They just understood. They were so totally accepting of the spirit and the ashes of Patrick's parents.
Yeah.
It was part of the welcome home. Very, very profound.
Yeah.
You went to the legendary High B pub in Cork, and I think people from Cork, where I'm from, would never forgive me if we didn't mention that you went there and managed not to get thrown out.
Yes.
We did. We were very good. We put our cell phones away.
None of this.
We had a great chat.
Yeah.
What a beautiful bar right in the center of town. You felt like you were sitting right on the pulse of Cork, which is saying something.
Yeah, absolutely. And Linda, I've seen Patrick mention that he'd like to get an Irish passport. I suspect you nearly love it here more than he does, do you?
Yes, I'm right behind him. I would love that. My own ancestors had moved over from Scotland up in the north, just outside of Belfast. But that was a few centuries ago, so I don't think I quite qualify. But, oh, yes, I mean, we've never had a bad, we've only had joyful, illuminating, fascinating times in Ireland. And honestly, with this documentary, we feel like we've barely touched the tip of the iceberg of what we would like to explore in Ireland.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, look, I'll tell you a secret, right, which is that when Yanks come home finding long lost relatives and everything and retracing their roots, every family in Ireland has had mixed experiences of that. There are some we love and some were like, when are they going to go? You are absolutely the kind that we love to see coming. So I hope we see a lot more of you over here. And Duffy's Pub is on RT1 on December 28th at 6:30 p.m. Patrick Duffy and Linda Pearl, thank you so much.
Well, Brendan,
so grateful.
Bless you, Brendan.
Treat. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Next time in person.
Yes, great. I look forward to seeing you.
At a pub.